Hi, and welcome to my podcast series, The New Abnormal. I'm Sean P. Lodishenesi, researcher, author, and speaker from Brand Positive. As a researcher, I've spent 20 years conducting ethnographic interviews on global projects. Along the way, I've been lucky enough to have met some amazing people, from psychologists to activists to creatives, some of whom I'll be talking to in this series. I'm also the author of The Post-Truth Business, which focused on trust, empathy, and privacy, while my second book, Influencers and Revolutionaries, looked into innovation, behavioural change, and the climate crisis. So, I hope you enjoy the interviews, and if so, please tell your friends, leave a rating, and watch out for our other episodes. Now, without further delay, let's crack on with today's podcast. So today I'm really looking forward to talking with the deeply interesting Ian Peters MB, who's a director at the Institute of Business Ethics. The Institute's purpose is to champion the highest standards of ethical behaviour in business. And Ian's a specialist in business policy, strategic communications, and thus highly experienced in media and government relations and business policy. So, Ian, hi, and how are you?
Yes, I'm very good, thank you. Looking forward to this. I was always interested to talk about current events and business related issues. So I'm very good.
Just to sort of set the scene, perhaps, I have to say, in terms of a view from Socrates and questioning everything and don't settle for anything that doesn't feel like the truth. Do I take it you did sort of philosophy back in university days, Ian?
Well, I did a PhD, which I always think is quite intriguingly, of course, a doctor of philosophy. But of course, you don't do any philosophy in a PhD. It's a research degree, and so having done my first degree in geography, very much focusing on economic geography, I was very interested in the business world and what makes business tick, and how important it is that business works and economies work, because that's what creates jobs and wealth and enables us to do all the things that we want in life, and to gain prosperity. Of course, the downside is it's not fair and equal, and some people gain more than others. So that sort of thing always interested me. And my PhD many years ago was a study of the influences and factors that influence the growth and development of small businesses. Yeah. So I sort of did research on that, looked at what enabled businesses to grow more successfully than others, and thereby generate more jobs. And from there, I moved into my first role, which was at the CBI, Confederation of British Industry, working in their small business unit.
Mm. And after that, I see sort of going through, just a really interesting array of organisations. So the British Chamber of Commerce, etc., the Regulatory Policy Committee, Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors, and then now with the Institute of Business Ethics. So, just to clarify precisely what the Institute is all about, perhaps just give us an overview there on, essentially, first of all, what is business ethics?
Oh, well, so we're interested in the application, or if you like, applied business ethics. So there's nothing theoretical about what we're interested in. We're interested in helping businesses to improve their behavior and the behavior of their people, to ensure that behavior, if you like, the culture in the organization, is consistent with the purpose and values of the organization. So it's really important, we maybe get on and talk a little bit more about this in a moment, but really important that businesses give careful thought to what they're about, what their purpose is, what they're here for, what they're trying to achieve, and what the values are that should help them to achieve those objectives. So we provide all sorts of advice and practical help to business organizations, not just commercial, but charities, third sector, government, and so on as well. Yeah. The Institute has been around since the 1980s. It was set up by a group of business people who thought there was a need for more ethical business. And we've been around ever since, doing research and thought leadership, advising companies, providing a forum in which companies can exchange best practice. And there is clearly still a great demand for that.
And on that exact point about you saying sort of practical help and best practice, I mean, I think one of the, certainly in, let's say, in branding terms, to state this staggeringly obvious, one of the major themes of the last decade has been so-called brand purpose, which has its detractors. And I think very interesting when I was talking with the head of global strategy at RGA, obviously one of the best agencies on the planet. And one of the things how they approach the issue of brand purpose is to note that actually in a lot of cases, I think as they put it, it's a lot of sort of a essentially toxic pomposity, as they put it. So a lot of posturing out there, a lot of talking about it without actually much genuine real action taking place. So in terms of, as you were just saying, that issue about practical help and clear guidance and best practices, etc. I know that one of the things that the Institute does is to really clarify how to build an ethical culture. So on that exact basis, what sort of things are you advising on for organizations and businesses of all varieties in terms of how they actually do it as opposed to just talk about it?
Well, it's probably helpful if I sort of use a bit of a structure for this. So we do start with purpose and values and behavior.
Yeah.
That's got to come first. But that's not just about sitting down with a communications agency to advise you on how to write a good purpose. If that's where you start, then you're deluded. You're not going to achieve anything particularly useful for your organization. You might pull the wool over a few people's eyes for a while, but this isn't just about doing the right job in relation to reputation. I mean, it has reputational benefit, of course it does. But if you start from the point of view of, oh, what do we do to improve our reputation, then you're missing the point.
Yeah.
The issue is, what genuinely is the purpose of my organization? And what do I want the organization to stand for? And how do I want my people to behave? And that has to come from the top of the organization. So the starting point is leadership. And we work a lot with boards and executive leadership in organizations to help and support them to address that. And there are lots of other organizations, of course, that do a very good job in this area. Mm-hmm. But, working through that purpose and the values is all about engaging with your people in your organization. You can't just do it on your own in isolation. If the chief executive or the chair of the board thinks they can just do this by themselves and then tell everybody else what this is the purpose and these are the values and we expect you to abide by them, then that's totally missing the point. This has to be a shared purpose and shared values. And that's all about how do you engage with your people. So there's a process to be gone through in order to ensure that everybody buys into those values. And, of course, it's a bit like painting the fourth road bridge, this, because you do it once, but then you have to do it again. Because by the time you've done it, people have left the company, people have moved on, new people have moved in, changes to leadership, etc. So you've got to keep refreshing it. And at the heart of this is a code of ethics, which we would argue all companies should have a code of ethics. Again, it needs to be real. It needs to be meaningful. And we advise companies to update their codes at least every 3 years. So values and purpose come first. Leadership has to lead from the front, but make sure that everybody's with it. Leadership can't lead by itself and then turn around and suddenly find that nobody's following, because that's not going to achieve the objective.
Yeah, that great sort of Nietzsche point about, as I think he put it, you've got to win it and keep on winning it. You've got to keep on doing it. It's not just a one-off statement or bit of behavior that can then be effectively put on the shelf and pointed at. Can we now talk about Ukraine in the context of the Institute for Business Ethics and organizations and businesses and brands, etc.? Certainly from the point of view of their attitudes towards Russia and the actions that they are or are not taking. I thought it was really interesting recently when you were talking about this for the media. And for instance, one of the points you made to the BBC when you said, and I'm now quoting you back at you, you know, this is not a time to sit on the fence. The world is likely to judge companies by what they do in these circumstances. So perhaps you can just unpack that and talk about the sort of things you've been talking about with the media and with no doubt with organizations about exactly what they should be doing, why they should be doing it, and where this all goes.
So business has been through a lot of shocks recently, and you know, I think the pandemic came as a massive hit, huge shock, and you know, it looks like you're just getting over that, and then we've got huge economic challenges, inflationary challenges, massive hit with energy costs, which knocks onto all the other costs, another big hit for business, and then Russia invades the Ukraine, and each of these has prompted a response from business. Business has to respond to these external events. So the question is, how prepared is business to be able to respond quickly and effectively to these external challenges? And they the challenges hit them in lots of ways, of course. But it is, I would say, critical that If business has thought about its purpose and values, and got that clear, got clarity around that, then I would argue it's more able to make the right choices and the right decisions. Now, one of the key things that we say in our guidance to organizations is that you need a decision-making model for people. And there's a number of questions you can ask, and people should ask themselves when making decisions. So let's just step back from this a little bit. Russia invades Ukraine. Governments react pretty quickly, some more quickly than others. All governments have been playing catch up, but have been introducing a range of sanctions and barriers to trade with Russia. The first question business asks itself is, quite rightly, are we compliant? So compliance risk is the first risk that concerns them. Very important, of course, and they must do that because they've absolutely got to stay the right side of the law in relation to compliance with those new measures. The second question that rapidly follows relates to reputational risk. And in particular, as people using social media, which, of course, these days, you know, it only takes hours, suddenly businesses are under pressure.
Yeah.
Because the public is saying, what are you doing about it? You know, what are you doing? How much business are you doing in Russia? Why are you still doing business in Russia? Why are you still operating on Moscow's high streets and so on? And so, again, business scrabbles around to react to that. But, of course, underlying a lot of this is the ethical risk. So they've reacted to the compliance risk, they've reacted to the reputational risk, but actually, if they thought earlier about the ethical risk of such events, world events, then I would say they're going to be more ready and able to react and respond, because they're basing their decisions not just on what, you know, the impact is to their reputation, but actually on what is the right thing to do in the circumstances. Now, that creates an ethical dilemma, though, because there isn't a simple right and wrong here, of course. Companies operating in Russia are, first of all, they're supplying a Russian market, and it may well be, if they're supplying food or medical supplies or whatever, that they feel they have a moral duty to, you know, not cut off those supplies to the Russian people. It's not the Russian people who've invaded the Ukraine, it's the Russian regime that's invaded the Ukraine. So the first question they start asking themselves is, well, is this right and proper to cut this off? And then also, of course, those that operate within Russia, the question arises, well, what's my duty to my employees? Because they'll then be out of work and they will then suffer. And they've served us loyally over a number of years. So surely we can't just cut them off. Mm. But, of course, there's a bigger issue, the great big issue that everybody's got to decide where they stand on, which is the fact that Russia has invaded Ukraine and is absolutely demolishing whole cities and killing Ukrainian citizens. So, you know, at some point, companies have to ask themselves, how far is my organization's continued operation in Russia giving the Russian regime a degree of legitimacy, because I'm willing to continue to do business with that regime? But we've got to remember that it's only a few months ago when nobody would have asked this question, and maybe they should have done. But for most of us, you know, well, Russia was much reformed compared to the Soviet days. And so doing business with them was encouraged, because it was going to encourage them to continue to reform, because there was economic benefit in doing so. So for many years, politicians, economists, business people have been encouraging trade and business with Russia. All of a sudden, virtually overnight, that situation changes. Some would say we could have foreseen a lot of this, and we should have reacted in many ways much earlier. But, you know, business has a lot of things to deal with. So it's a difficult ethical dilemma as to at what point do you change tack, and how far do you go, and what duty do you still have, for example, to your employees in Russia. I think one of the things that you've got to, though, really take into account in making these decisions is the public sentiment, if you like. So society's values, which of course will vary depending on where you are and who you are. So when we advise companies, we look at the values of the organization, and we always make clear that, you know, it's not just about your values. Your values, your corporate values, don't exist in isolation, because your employees have their own values. Your customers have their own values. There are professional values for those professionals who may work in your organization.
Yeah.
And then there are societal values.
Yeah.
And in determining your values, you need to take account of the values of your stakeholders and wider society. And what I think we've seen, you know, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, is all of a sudden people have woken up and said, right, well, where do I stand on this? What are my values in relation to this? Yeah. And, you know, most people in the West have concluded that, well, where they stand is for the people of Ukraine and to support the people of Ukraine, and that anybody who is, you know, trading in Russia or doing business in Russia is arguably, you know, not sharing that value. So companies have to think very hard about that and where their values then sit in relation to those wider societal values, and how they're going to reconcile the two.
Mm-hmm. I think on exactly those points, I mean, I saw the CEO of the World Federation of Advertisers saying that, you know, brands mustn't intentionally fund or support the regime of Putin. They're talking about elsewhere, the World Advertising Research Center last week came out with a statement saying companies are now facing a very different political agenda from just a couple of months ago. Yep. You need to formulate responses for both the short term
and what we can expect to be an utterly changed longer term. And then there's a myriad number of studies being done into this at the moment. So YouGov came out with a report last week based on some a lot of quantitative work they've been doing, talking about, and this is purely from a UK point of view, saying the British public expects brands to take a stand. 2 in 3 Britons say it's important for brands to publicly take a stance on the Russia-Ukraine crisis. And 3 in 5 say they're less likely to buy from a brand that continues doing business in Russia. But as you say, at the same time, it wasn't not so long ago at all that businesses were being absolutely encouraged to do so on a very, very proactive basis.
This is why business ethics matters, and this is why it really needs to be taken seriously right at the top of the organization. I come across too many companies who, you know, they have an ethics function. The ethics function's 3 or 4 people. They maybe do a report to the board once or twice a year, and apart from that, you know, the board doesn't really pay any attention to them. I think, you know, boards have got to wake up and smell the coffee here. You know, this is a really seriously about how their business ultimately performs. I mean, it's not just the right thing to do, it's the only thing to do, because if you don't get it right, then your business without question will suffer. And I would hope that you'll want to get it right because it's the right thing to do. But, you know, either way, you know, your business is going to be impacted by how you respond and indeed how you and your people behave. And we see lots of examples of this. And obviously, you know, we're talking about Ukraine, but, you know, there's another great big issue in the media at the moment, and that's P&O Ferries. Sure. And the way they've treated their employees. And, you know, so another great example of, you know, thinking very carefully about what you do before you do it, because it's going to massively impact your reputation. But also, of course, it's massively impacted the livelihoods of an awful lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. On that issue about... public engagement with organizations, consumer and citizen engagement, etc., and certainly linking to the huge, again, meta issue of trust. Obviously one of the, you know, epic points of our time, and certainly I've written a lot about this. I mean, I wonder if you see this issue changing over time, because, you know, you've been obviously absolutely focused on this overall area for many, many years now. So, I mean, looking at, you know, one of the best known studies into, let's say, trust is done by Edelman, the global PR agency. And I remember being interviewed by them way back, you know, about 20 years ago when they did their first ever study into it. And it's interesting to look at just, you know, how they've seen the issue of trust change over the years. It's a very quick flick through that. So going right back to, let's say, 2001, when they looked at things like the rising influence of NGOs, going through things like, you know, the fall of the celebrity CEO and how that impacted on trust, that the way that trust shifted from authorities to peers as things like sort of social media got bigger and bigger and bigger. Issues around, you know, business being more trusted than government and media, young people having more trust in it, trust in business plummeting, crisis of leadership, falls of governments, issues of how it links to innovation, you know, crisis in trust again, again, and again, issues around post-truth and the battle for truth. And now looking at things like, you know, as they put it, the cycle of distrust, which links around, you know, business and society and companies having to demonstrate progress, thinking about the longer term and providing transparency, etc. I wondered, from your perspective and from the Institute's perspective, how you've again have seen the issues of trust ebbing and flowing, and how that's changed over the years.
It's interesting you raise it, and interesting you raise the Edelman Trust Barometer as well. We had a webinar with Edelman just yesterday. at the IBE. And I thought there were some very interesting things there. And one thing, in fact, I wrote down is that people want more business leadership nowadays in relation to societal issues. They're looking to business to lead the way. They're losing, they've lost faith and confidence in the politicians and in the media. And actually, they're looking for business to take the lead, which I find interesting, and it's quite a responsibility, I think, for business in many ways. But also interesting how again, the other thing I wrote down, which, you know, and we find this ourselves in our own work at the IBE, 66% of the people responding to their latest survey, 66% said they trusted their own CEO, the CEO of their own company, their own employer. But only 49% trusted CEOs in general.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we often see this. There's a real difference between what you think of business as a whole and what you think of your own organization. And there's a gap to be made up. How is it, you know, has it changed over time? Yes, I think it has. You know, I first started work in business organizations in the CBI in the 1980s, in Margaret Thatcher's time. During the days of the miners' strike, and you know, when there was a massive push on deregulation, a massive push on promoting the enterprise economy, and by the way, you know, a lot of that was necessary, but at the same time, wasn't it Margaret Thatcher who said there's no such thing as society?
Yep.
Really? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't think anybody would say that today. So it wasn't just business and trust in business. I think, you know, we went through a period where, you know, competition was king, and really nothing else mattered. And the only way to grow the economy, and everybody would benefit if we grew the economy, was, you know, economic, you know, free market economics. So that's changed somewhat. And I think most organizations nowadays and most organizations' boards recognize that they have a duty that goes beyond their own shareholders and indeed even beyond their own workers and customers, to a wider duty to society. And we see this, you know, reflected in the regulatory environment, where the UK Corporate Governance Code, which remains, you know, on the basis of comply or explain, it's not a law, but it sets the tone and really, I think, you know, creates a real expectation that organisations, you know, take their role and their duty to create a culture in their organization and values in their organization that result in the right sort of ethical behavior. Organizations like the Financial Reporting Council tend not to use words like ethics because that can be misinterpreted. I have no problem in using the word ethics, but an ethical culture is what really we're all about. And all organisations should be thinking about, you know, not being do-gooders, but yes, doing good and not harm, and that's quite critical, I think, for organisations to build in. And increasingly, it's what customers want to see. So absolutely, you know, we want to buy from organisations that we believe are ethical and sustainable. It's what employees want to see. And, you know, when talent is scarce, then the organizations that have the sort of values that are, you know, well received by the people they're trying to employ are more likely to recruit the skills that they need and the talent that they need to be able to drive the business forward. So, you know, it's enlightened self-interest, this, as, you know, nobody's saying it's just about doing the right thing. But one would hope that, you know, our business leaders aren't just doing it for cynical reasons, but are doing it because they recognize it is the right way to go.
Absolutely. And that they see about sort of a, I think you're alluding to these around sort of a public desire for humane capitalism, should we say, is absolutely there. I thought it was very interesting on this exact point. I think Matthew Syed wrote a very good piece recently, I think, for the New Statesman. We're talking about today's masters of the universe are still being taught that ethics don't matter. And he talked there about, you know, without a moral framework, economies can't thrive. He mentioned a really interesting point in that, you know, back in the day when in his university days, he said that in his 3 years of studying economics, morality wasn't mentioned once by his professors, which troubled him deeply at the time. He said it's not unlike studying physics without hearing about gravity.
Yeah, it's for a long time, you know, it was. This was something that was frowned upon in lots of spheres, political, academic, and, of course, in business. I think it's interesting that the Institute of Business Ethics was established in 1986, right in the middle of the thatch.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there have always been business leaders around who have felt that there needed to be a counterweight to that sort of perspective, and I think it's real testament to those people back then who established the Institute, you know, that it's lasted and continues to be, you know, valued by many major organizations. You know, our supporters are, you know, come from all sectors of the economy. We've got major energy companies, we've got major financial services companies, we've got major manufacturers, hospitality sector, high tech, you know, you name it. They're in there and recognize how important this is and recognize the value of sharing, you know, of coming together to work out, you know, how to maintain the best policies and programs in the ethics area.
And yet, and as we begin to move towards the end of this interview, it's been so interesting talking with you. Thank you so much, Ian. I think very interesting that there's also perhaps just as a slight refutation here, you know, one of the great sort of, if you say, issues that was spoken about only a few months ago, linked into what Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum termed the Great Reset. As he put it, you know, COVID had torn up the script by how we viewed how to govern countries and indeed companies, how to live with others and take part in the global economy. And there's a lot of talk then about, you know, a great desire to change things, to look to a brave new world. And yet, if one is now looking to people like the Social Market Foundation, very interesting point put out a while ago by James Kirkup, saying that he viewed it, the post-COVID revolution has been cancelled. All those hopes of building a fairer society and improving the lot of key workers, etc., are being trumped by a wish to return to so-called normal as we were a couple of years ago. So there's that issue there as well.
Well, all commentators love the opportunity to comment on change and, I was fascinated, when we talked about, the way the world was going to reset, business was going to be different, everything was going to be different. Now, some things have changed. There are many more people operating in a sort of now hybrid business world where they're spending some time in the office, but more time working from home. That's quite a profound change. From the research that we've done, we've seen employees take a much more positive view of their employers and how they've been treated by their employers as a result of the pandemic. I think employers have responded very positively and in a very supportive way as a rule, we can all think of examples of where that hasn't been the case. So, you know, there has been change and there are certain aspects of that that we need to keep and to hold on to. But of course, you know, life moves on and another crisis is around the corner and everybody then focuses on that. But I think there have been changes for the better. Equally, we need to be careful not to assume that every crisis results in a complete reset and, you know, there's a completely new world. Because, you know, it's always much more about evolution than revolution. I think, I mean, the one thing I would like to just say is that in my experience, that there's one really important thing that organisations need to take very, very seriously, and that's how they listen. We hear a lot about the importance of whistleblowing. People, you know, speak out when they see something that's not wrong. We see continual examples of failures in that area, often, by the way, in the public sector as well as the private sector. So, you know, two current examples: Shropshire Health Trust, Telford and Shropshire. You know, people there, even when the investigation was going on, being put under pressure not to speak.
Yeah,
I mean, that is disgraceful.
Yeah,
that is absolutely appalling. And that needs to be rooted out and dealt with. You know, there should be absolutely no tolerance for that sort of behaviour. And the people responsible really should be taken to task. But, it's not just, you know, so the health service is, and there's a lot of good work, by the way, going on in the health service, promote speak up. There's a really important initiative there. But also, you know, look right at the heart of government, you know, people were concerned about parties in number 10. Yep. Did they feel they could speak up about it? Some of them tried. Were they listened to? No. Why? Because there was no effective mechanism for speaking up in the heart of government. Again, absolutely appalling. You know, we're here trying to encourage businesses to do the right thing, and yet the country's leaders don't do the right thing. So, you know, I don't get into politics very much. I try to avoid it. And it's not our business at the IBE to get into politics. But, you know, we really have to think very seriously about public life and whether, you know, there is sufficient recognition of the need to behave ethically and the need to have safeguards in place to ensure that people can and do behave ethically. And allowing and enabling people, encouraging people to be able to speak up is really important. But it goes beyond speaking up when something goes wrong. We actually need to listen more, generally, in society. And that is, if I may, where diversity comes in. So, you know, we've had Black Lives Matter, we've had the Me Too movement, and I know a lot of people are now concerned that that's waning because, you know, it was a it was a moment and people all got behind it and then the spotlight goes somewhere else. Diversity isn't just about ethnicity or gender or any other groups in society. What it should be about is, of course, inclusion. And inclusion means listening to all the voices, not just some of the voices.
Yeah.
It means ensuring that in your organization, whether you're government, whether you're health service, whether you're running an energy company or a bank or whatever it is, you really do encourage everybody to participate, to give a view and to enable you to ensure that you you are fully conscious of those views and values of society that are around you, because you don't work in isolation. So you can come up with a set of values, but if you're not listening to everybody around you, which sort of takes us full circle to what we were talking about right at the start, that, you know, societal values matter, and society is heterogeneous. You know, there are lots of different people in society and different groups in society with some values in common and some values that may differ. We need to understand those values and we need to embrace them if we're really going to, you know, operate in this world in a way that gains trust from society and trust from our customers, our employees, and all of our stakeholders.
Yeah. An excellent manifesto, it has to be said. So, Ian, just to begin to finish off then, what's coming up for the short, perhaps to a medium-term future for yourself and for the Institute? Are there any events on the horizon and or activities taking place that you should know about?
So we've recently launched a report only a week or two ago on ethics and ESG. ESG investing, environmental, social and governance criteria when it comes to investing. You know, we think it's really important that the asset managers, the investment community, take account of the values and culture of the organization and how far that sets the tone for whether the organization's reporting on ESG matters is believable, is truthful and valid. And we think, you know, there's that dimension is really important. So we'll be looking to promote more of the dialogue with the financial community, with the investment management and asset management community on that. We think it's very important because they have so much influence over the way organizations behave. We're also looking at culture in terms of how do you promote and embed the right culture in your organization? And we want to use the term ethical culture more and more, because there is more to culture than ethics, to be fair. You know, culture is a wider thing, but it's ethical culture that we're really concerned about here. So, you know, reflecting some of the things I've been talking about earlier, how do we develop that ethical culture and how do we measure it? How do we, you know, so we need to do a gap analysis, work out what the culture is now, where we want to get to, and then we need to be able to measure whether we're getting there. So that's a really important piece. And the third thing just to mention is risk. I started our conversation talking a bit about risk and ethical risk as well as reputational and compliance risks. I don't think we know enough about ethical risk. I don't think we talk enough about ethical risks. And I don't think that dialogue is deep and rich enough. So we're going to do a survey a little later in the year to try and get greater clarity on what ethical risks organizations are facing and what they're doing about them. And we will then probably do that once a year so that we get a bit of a, you know, we can track it and we can work out whether those ethical risks are changing. I imagine the risk of the implications of doing business in Russia is probably pretty high on that list for many people. And of course, a year ago, it wouldn't have been anywhere at all.
Well, that was such a fascinating conversation. As the Institute says, all organizations need to demonstrate that they're trustworthy, and the Institute of Business Ethics is an important partner to any business wanting to preserve its long-term reputation by doing business in the right way. So to Ian Peters, MBE, the Director at the Institute of Business Ethics, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the New Abnormal podcast.
Just so you know, the trends and insights discussed in these podcasts link to my speeches. Check out seanpeterc.com for more info, and to ongoing cultural and social research conducted by brandpositive.org.
Till next time, goodbye.